Welcome back to the Daily Drum, the inside segment on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're sitting with the Chancellor of the D.C. Public School System, Antoine Wilson. Lines are still open if you have any questions at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I wanted to ask you about the report out of the Washington Post about suspensions and reporting that came out this July. In the article, you said that you stand by the numbers, and the Post was reporting that there are more suspensions that are being supported. How do parents and other interested parties know that that is true?
Yeah, I want to, you know, just say first and foremost, and I'll just share what I the full statement I gave, and because only part of it was mentioned and not in context, and it just to express the importance of integrity for ourselves. I mean, it's a value, personal value that I have. So the idea of reporting something accurately is extremely important to me. So integrity for ourselves and our students is critical value in the D.C. public schools, not just for myself, but it's one that we have to hold ourselves to as an institution. We have to have a very high bar. So as a school district, all students, they should be in school every day. They need to get the academic, the social, emotional supports to thrive in schools, and it's our policy to admit students every day. Now, when I talk about being proud of the 40% reduction, is just to say that I have visited schools, heard from students specifically in their schools about specific practices that have made differences in the schools. I asked for an audit of our practices in the district before this came out, because coming in, I have spent a lot of my career working with schools to reduce suspensions, to create spaces for young people to be in school so that we aren't seeing disproportionate outcomes in suspensions. I've spent a lot of time working and speaking on this issue nationally. So it is a priority, and in order to do this well, you need to get accurate information about what is happening in the system so that we can put in a common set of practices that are clear to students as well as teachers as well as parents as to what we will do when we find students commit certain behaviors that should lead to discipline. We don't have a common discipline ladder that's used by all schools. What, as I shared with committed to the mayor before I started, this was an issue she talked with me about, that we will have one of those. I think it's important to have a discipline matrix. Parents should know that an incident that happens on one side of town, that it'll be addressed similarly as it will be addressed in a different part of town and with students. We'll look into the issue to see what is real and to have an independent assessment. I look forward to making that public. And once we get that information, we'll act upon it.
But with that said, and this isn't a D.C. thing, this is a, as you just said, you know, a national issue about public school systems reexamining discipline. And I don't think it's a stretch to say, particularly as it relates to young black males, being less punitive and looking at a different way to address inappropriate behavior. And so should all infractions be handled in the same way? If something happens in Ward 1 and one activity happens in Ward 1 and the same kind of issue happens in Ward 7 or 8, should there be a sliding scale? Should there be a holistic way of looking at this? Do we need to look at the specific individual and examine why X happened?
Yeah, so there are a few things that I would just say in terms of the discipline. One is, going back historically, and without getting into it too much, it's criminalizing natural behaviors, mm-hmm. natural reactions, and then having those behaviors criminalized or presumed to be disrespectful, if you will, when they're not. Okay, there are natural behaviors that young people engage in, and not taking the time to actually get to know young people, understand where they're coming from, and teach them and all of that. And that can happen across the board. But unfortunately, what happens with many African-American students, African-American males specifically, is that some of the behaviors that they may engage in, which are no different than behaviors that are engaged in by other groups of students, can be looked at differently because of the work that needs to happen that hasn't happened many times in many school districts around cultural responsiveness and the work that needs to happen in terms of even cultural competence in the first place. So to answer your question in terms of behaviors, what will play out is a young person engaged in one part of town might engage in what one might call horseplay, fooling around, off-task behavior. And that behavior is addressed, and there's a warning and so on and so forth. And in another part of town, you have a young person engaged in the exact same behavior but may roll their eyes or sigh or whatever the case may be. So it wasn't the behavior that was the issue. It was how the adult felt about how the student responded to being corrected. Those types of things can be trained. Those types of things we can work and help people understand that the escalation, allowing ourselves to escalate consequences when students engage in perfectly reasonable reactions, considering the environment that young people may be in, the disrespect that we may be giving to a young person that we don't even know that we're putting off. Those types of things can be addressed. And so how do you do that? You train on cultural responsiveness and cultural competence. So you take the time to help people understand the power of restorative practices.
And what is that?
Restorative justice is really just trying to understand how it deals with trying to help people understand where people are coming from, trying to repair harm that was done, intentional or unintentional, creating safe spaces where the power dynamic it doesn't exist. And some people will say, you know, I'm a person in authority, they should listen to me. Well, sometimes it's your authority and how you're coming across that's leading to the behavior. And you can create a situation where you are able to talk to a young person, understand where they're coming from. You might find out that it's not actually you that's the issue specifically yourself, but is what you represent and how that they associate that with something negative. And that's leading to the behavior. But if I can't say that to you, as a young person, it creates a problem. So there's so many different ways in which you can begin to train a staff and embed these types of practices within the policies, and that's what's consistent across the district. So those types of things can be normalized. And then what you can also begin to teach people is how to get to know young people. And then what absolutely has to be consistent is that if a young person is supposed to be in school, that they're being told they can be in school. If a young person is suspended, that it's quite clear that they are suspended. There can be no gray area there. There can be no middle ground about that. And if, you know, if people need to, you know, we get an audit back and we see that our systems need to be improved, and I'm sure they do, then we will absolutely address it. But I want to make sure that we are not painting everyone with a broad brush, and that we are getting accurate information so that we can improve. It's something that I led in Denver. It's something that I was a part of leading in Oakland, and it's something that I look forward to being a part of leading here.
When you talk about parents participating in the process, I would argue that that is probably, you know, short of school security and safety, that is probably one of the steepest hills to climb, and particularly for urban school districts. What is your plan to get more parents to participate in the education of their child and the progress of the school system?
Well, what I will say is this. I have to break it down into its basic form. And, you know, I started out as a teacher. And one of the things I always said to myself as a teacher is that if I ever forget what it was like to be a student and what it was like to grow up in a household with a single parent and someone who was fighting for their child to be successful, then I would not do the job anymore. So the first thing that we want to make sure that we're doing is valuing every parent and seeing that they have value and they have the same hopes and dreams for their child as any parent has. And that means sometimes, though, that some parents are situated where they can't put in the same type of time as other parents, and that's for all kinds of reasons. So it's respect taking the time to help people understand what it means to outreach, engage in outreach with families in ways in which they need to be outreach. So sometimes you need to go to the home and have the conversation. Sometimes the meeting needs to be at the community center in the neighborhood or the library in the neighborhood. And so we're going to work to and make sure that our schools have a menu of strategies over the next 5 years to use with families so that they can help them. And then lastly, we want to recognize that some students are in foster care or informal foster care systems, which means that we need to find significant adult individuals who are in their lives and connect them to the school as well.
Chancellor Antoine Wilson, D.C., the Wilson, D.C. Public Schools System. I'm going to work on getting your name right today.
All good.
Thank you so much, Chancellor Wilson. I appreciate you coming in and sharing with us. And good luck in the new school year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, August 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.